From roommates to co-hosts, this is the BS Sports Show with Brendan Azoff and Stefan Rosner. Your go-to destination for New York hockey and NHL news. And now it's time to drop the puck. Here are your hosts, Brendan Azoff and Stefan Rosner.
Welcome to the BS Sports Show, everybody. Brendan Azoff, Stefan Rosner here with you. And I mean, I think we're having a little bit of technical difficulties to kick things off. Stefan just got booted and reappeared, but welcome to the show, everybody. And Stefan, before we get into things, I just wanted to offer my condolences on the passing of your grandfather. Life sucks sometimes. I'm sorry. And, you know, we're all here from you, and we'll have a good show in honor of him.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah. 95 years old, in and out of the hospital. So, you know, it's safe to say, you know, better that way, but still a sad day. The funeral was earlier today, but Brendan, I appreciate it, and thanks everybody who's reached out on social media. I really do appreciate it.
Of course. So obviously we got a great show planned today. Late start because now I'm a working man and I work 9 to 6.
Let's go.
Yeah. So my schedule is going to have to alter. I see I'm dressed like I just got home from work, which I really did just jump from one computer onto this one.
I was going to say, you didn't leave anywhere.
Yeah. COVID times means you work remotely, but all right, let's get things going. We got the league set to begin pretty much officially on January 13th, and realignment looks like it's official. Just they got to work out a couple of minor kinks, barring any COVID implications there. But the exciting thing is once the NHL season starts, you got all these European players that start to come back, and we're starting to see that now. You got Wahlstrom, who just left his team overseas. Buchnevich just arrived here. Panarin was already here. Igor Shesterkin's catching a flight and coming back to New York. So Once you see players that are overseas start to come home, here we go, baby. Hockey's back.
I mean, less than a month at this point, Brendan. It's less than a month away, and you know we've been waiting for this one for a while. There's still a lot to be done, given the fact that you got to hope that there's a safe month right now. Nothing catastrophic happens in the world today. But it's exciting, and we get to dive into some real tough issues about the Islanders, Rangers, recap what happened last season, all that fun stuff. So let's get it going.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, first off, the World Junior Championships are starting soon, and the Islanders and Rangers are represented there. I know the Islanders have two, correct?
Yes.
Two prospects that are playing?
Rajaniemi and Holmstrom.
And the Rangers have four, two on Canada, two on Team USA. And that tournament every year is exciting to watch. I mean, last year it was the Alexei Lafreniere show. Then all of a sudden he was injured, and people thought, wow, the consensus number one overall pick is going to be hurt. He wound up coming back, obviously, still won the tournament MVP. Great tournament for him. And yeah, I mean, who's going to stand out this year? I think Anton Lundell on Team Sweden is one of the obvious candidates. Missed last year's, but still a stud overseas in Sweden right now. And we'll see what happens if he could jump out the way people expect him to in this tournament.
Well, when you think about, you know, usually you have the World Juniors. Well, usually this happens mid-season, so it's not, this is a completely unique thing. But one thing we could talk about is there's not going to be a preseason. I've spoken to people, there's not going to be a preseason. If anything, maybe one game, but I doubt that. So the World Junior Championships is like a preseason tournament for some of these players where maybe AHL, NHL, we know a lot of players aren't going, like Kaapo Kakko, Lafreniere, Jack Hughes, Nick Robertson, all that stuff. They're not playing in this tournament. While they're already on rosters, or most of them are going to be on rosters, there are some guys that, you know, might get that preseason opportunity. And, you know, they're not going to have that this year. So this is their time to shine. And it's going to be very interesting to see which guys take advantage of this opportunity. Because, again, this tournament could have been canceled. And if this tournament was canceled, you got to just rely that you did well enough prior to this to make a roster. You know, training camps can only be a couple, maybe 2 weeks, if that, 10 days. So you don't have that much time to make a great impression. So for a lot of these kids in this tournament, this is their time to shine.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to get into that a little bit later when we talk about the hometown hockey, because the Rangers President John Davidson actually addressed this topic, and he had some interesting remarks about it. But like you said, big names aren't competing in it because the NHL season is going to be starting just days after this tournament ends. There's no point in risking injury, especially with the top prospects that we're talking about. We're talking about Nick Robertson on Toronto, Jack Hughes on the Devils, Kakko, and Lafreniere on the Rangers. No way these guys are going to suit up, especially once the news started to break that mid-January would be the start date for the NHL season. So we look at that, and we look at the World Juniors, and obviously every year the competition's phenomenal. Every year we have some type of five-round shootout game. Yeah. Some hero gets
made. Five hole.
I mean, there's always one 5-0 goal. There's always one type of Troy Terry because international rules has that. Once everybody goes, the same shooter can go countless times. But it's exciting. And then as soon as that tournament ends, we have the NHL season to look forward to. So just an exciting time to be a hockey fan.
Yeah, listen, nobody wanted this. You know, we wanted the season back in October. Unfortunately, these are the circumstances. And for hockey fans, yes, it's not a good thing that this is happening. But like you said, we get World Juniors right into NHL hockey. And then after the NHL season is done, we have the Olympics, but also the Thrice League. The Thrice League is a 3-on-3 league that's coming this July or June, which is a 3-on-3. They're going to do tournament plays. It's going to be really cool. The guy that
like the Big Three?
It's like the Big Three, except it's hockey, and it's a whole league based on just 3-on-3, and they'll be traveling around the United States and Canada. Let's see with that. But it's run by the assistant coach for the Miracle team.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he is running it. He is the commissioner of the league, and it's funny. I got to meet him at when we were working in Bing. That was if we have time later, I'll tell that story. That's unreal, but if not, next time. But yeah, though, that league comes there, and then you have the Olympics. You got lined up, and then you have baseball. So hockey really sets the tone for the other sports coming back to their normal thing. It'll be fun because, again, we've been logging for this. I'm just hoping that players don't get hurt. You know, a short training camp means less time to get your legs underneath you. And for some teams like the Red Wings or teams that didn't qualify, they've had a lot of time off. And it's not like they've had a lot of time off practicing. Yes, probably they were doing individual stuff. But you're getting right into the nitty-gritty hockey, which NHL hockey, which is just on another level, and it's an extreme sport with the hitting and all that stuff. So you just hope that people don't get hurt. But that, I think, is a great segue into, should there be expanded rosters?
I'm going to say yes, just because, well, one, we saw it in the bubble, right? Obviously, it was important in the bubble because of all the players that you didn't know how they were going to wind up transitioning in. You didn't know who was going to be sick, if there was going to be an outbreak, what was going to happen. That was one of the fears, and the NHL, brilliant job of avoiding that. But you look at what happened in the NFL, right? Another physical sport, had a very limited training camp, didn't play any preseason games, and injuries are just rampant throughout the league right now. So I think for the NHL to have at least 26 skaters, which seems like what's being talked about, so that's three more than usual, just to have that safety valve of not even COVID, but the fact that, like you said, 10 days to prepare for a 56-game sprint where every game means something physical, like the physicality is going to be through the roof. I don't care what anybody says about COVID. These guys want to make the playoffs, and they know that every game means something. So having that safety net there is going to be huge. And I think we're going to see, at least until the AHL starts up in February, an expanded roster.
There's no reason not to, unless the reason is, listen, COVID wise, we want as small as a team possible. But at the same time, like you said, look at what's happening in the NFL. People are getting hurt. Kickers apparently can kick, but that has nothing to do with COVID. They're just not doing well this year. But you look at it, and you know, for some of these guys, like you said, until the AHL begins, you want these guys getting reps. You know, most of them have two-way contract deals, which maybe the NHL teams might say, listen, we don't want to do this because then we got to pay three more players an NHL salary. But at the same time, if somebody gets hurt, you want guys practicing and being up with the club. You don't want to get a guy that hasn't played in a couple of months and go, all right, time for NHL play. I think it would be smart to do because injuries will happen. Doesn't matter if we say, no, they'll be ready to go. It's going to happen. Injuries happen in every sport. What about if someone gets COVID? If someone tests positive for COVID, you're not going to have enough time before a game if someone tests positive to emergency call somebody up from the AHL, and there's no AHL. So those guys are home wherever they are. You're not getting a private jet sent to their house. You got to have guys on standby that are ready to go, and I think that it would be smart to expand it.
Well, I'm not sure how that whole contract situation works. It could be – I thought they had to play in the games for – a rookie's contract to get affected, and so if they're scratched, that I'm not sure if it impacts it. So like you could see somebody like I'm just gonna say Kratzoff, even though it's not gonna happen, but a player like that could be a scratch for those games and not play and then get sent down to the AHL. But you might as well have them in your back pocket. I know financials become a big thing in the NHL, especially with a flat cap, but you kind of need those extra bodies just in case. I mean if an outbreak happens, you could have four or five guys go down at once. So you're going to be calling players up regardless.
Well, if you think about it too, again, with no AHL, at the least, these guys don't play and they get to practice with the NHL club. And that's only going to make them better players. They'll learn tricks. Even if they're out for a week or 2 weeks, you learn valuable stuff during those practices. I know, you know, we talk about Sorokin and he hasn't gotten any game time, but he practiced in the bubble. We won't know how much that affected him, but at the same time, if you talk to him about it, he'll probably say that was valuable ice time. and a valuable learning experience. So if anything, it'll only help these players as they go down to the AHL and try to work on their game.
Definitely. I mean, listen, any type time you could take practice on a North American service for Sorokin, that's huge. Now, granted, there's a hiatus. He probably went home before this all started, so he's back on the bigger ice service. So there's still going to be that adjustment, but it'll be easier to make now that he's already done it. Instead of, like, you have Shesterkin, who came over and had to get ready for the season, first time seeing that type of ice service on a consistent basis, especially at the talent level that the NHL and AHL provide. So I think that's huge for him. And it's huge for all these players that are just going to be practicing, right? I mean, people made fun of all the depth moves that the Rangers made this offseason, primarily because of the expansion draft that's coming after this year. They wanted players to expose, but now all of a sudden you got Anthony Boteto, who could fill in on the blue line if need be, an emergency basis. You got Colin Blackwell, who can come in. They got guys who, Kevin Rooney, people that have played in the NHL. So if somebody does get COVID, it's not all stars that are replacing them. But hey, you got quality NHL vets.
Islanders did the same thing. I mean, not NHL vets, but they have they just traded for Timoshov, a young guy. He played for Detroit at the end of the season. He's played for Toronto as well. Young kid. I think he's 24 years old. Hasn't proven himself. Has, I think, 44 games at the NHL level. They also traded for AJ Greer earlier on in the offseason. So definitely depth moves where maybe they're competing for a starting job, maybe they're not. But at the same time, it's never a problem in any sport. It's never too much depth is never a problem. To move on, the AHL is planning to come back. February 5th is the target date. And for Brendan, me and you, we work with the Bing Devils. And I think minor league sports in general are such a big thing for a community. I know, you know, I'm on Long Island. You're in Brooklyn. That's not minor league stuff really. You have Staten Island Yankees in baseball or the Cyclones. But
not anymore.
Not anymore. I know they cut them. But, you know, you look at it, we work there and just, you know, the crowd, it's just such a big thing for those towns. And yes, you probably can't go to games and all that stuff, but for those small towns, that's their professional team. That's their stuff. And to them, meeting guys like that or hearing guys like that, those are professional athletes, and they are professional athletes. They're working their way up. I think it's a really cool thing that where AHL teams are located, usually in places that don't have major sport teams. And I think getting them started back is just going to help the communities. And, you know, we saw so many little kids come and just, it seemed like they were in heaven, right? Looking around, seeing the players. I mean, they would shake our hands. I think we were cool. We were just working the door. So AHL coming back is a very good thing. Of course, it's good for the league, good for the prospects. But at the same time, it does have a major effect on the community.
Well, yeah, I mean, AHL action, you're right on top of it. You know, you go to a game at MSG, Nassau Coliseum, or any professional rink, it costs a lot more money to sit on top of the glass than it does at an AHL arena. And especially like a team that you mentioned, the Binghamton Devils, who we worked for, the amount of talent that started coming in there towards the end of the season, you're like, wow, these guys are pretty good. This is the next wave, right? So it's always cool that Corey Schneider started the season there. So granted, it's not the same Corey Schneider we saw 7 years ago, but it's still Corey Schneider that you're getting to watch up close. And it gives you that unique aspect, and you get to see the next wave of talent. But the AHL coming back is huge for the NHL too, because it gives them an outlet for their players. You got somebody like Keandre Miller that left Wisconsin early to come join the Rangers, at least compete for a spot at training camp, probably start in the AHL. And now all of a sudden that whole plan is gone because the AHL didn't start. The NHL didn't start. And now he's just sitting there watching his old teammates play. He probably wishes he stayed one more year. Right. So that becomes the big issue. But once the NHL comes back, the AHL starts back up, NHL teams start to get more sense of normalcy amongst who's going to be up and who's going to be down. And that's when you'll see the action get rampant and start really picking up. I think that after that February 5th mark, we're about a month in. It's the NHL season, so teams know who's legit, who's not. And now they can call people up, get their younger players some ice time. That's when the season will start to get really fun.
And teams are going to know what they need. You know, what's the hole? Like for, I don't know, some teams, goaltending might be weak. The backup goalie. Now, you know, okay, we're going to really keep our eye on not only our team's backup or starter in the NHL, but other teams. You know, those prospects that might be trade bait or whatever the case may be. But it's going to be I think, I don't know when the trade deadline is going to be. There will be one. It might be a lot of moves given the fact that, first off, expansion draft coming up. And secondly, teams might need players out of nowhere because of COVID, out of injury. It's going to be a crazy season, but I'm all ready for it.
The big question that still remains is, when's the trade deadline going to be, right? I mean, usually it's a set time. Teams can prepare for it. You get a certain amount of games to see what you got, have an injury or anything that comes up. Now in the 56-game season, you're not going to have that type of leeway. So you're going to have to tell early on, are you a pretender or a contender? You're going to see a couple of GMs make that mistake and think that they're a pretender when their team starts to pick it up. And I mean, it's going to be just another twist to a 2020 that's completely unique already. 2021,
so,
though.
So I just looked it up. The last lockout was 2012, 2013, right?
Yeah.
All right. The trade deadline was April 3rd that year.
When they start.
They started, I think they started in January or February because it was only a 48-game season, I believe. And the players involved in any trades after the deadline were ineligible to participate in the Stanley Cup playoffs. But they that's a late trade deadline. So I feel like we'll see a lot of moves given the fact it's got, you know, you just got to see where people are in the standings.
You say they were ineligible to play in the playoffs?
Players involved in any trades after the deadline. So I guess waiver and stuff like that, trades there were ineligible to play. So it's interesting, but again, nevertheless, it's going to be exciting. And this is a big time for players, you know, ice time. A lot of players don't get a lot of ice time, you know, here or there. And you're going to have to make the most of your opportunities this year because there are less games. A guy like a Wahlstrom, who the Islanders are expecting great things from, hoping he breaks it out of training camp, playing on the third line, maybe moving his way up. You play bad the first 10 games, that's it. The next guy's got to come up because you can't afford – there's no luxury of having a full season to work things out. Same thing with Dobson. They're planning for Dobson to be a top four guy. Now, I think they'll ride him out regardless. But after the first 20 or so games, he doesn't look so good. You got Andy Green as your seventh guy, let's say. If they sign him back, you can't afford – there's not a, it's not a joke of a year. You know, there's no asterisk. People say, oh, there's going to be an asterisk. There's no asterisk. It's not a joke of a year. You're playing to win every game. So if you have a guy in the lineup that's not holding up his end, whatever the case may be, a rookie, first year, second year struggles, veteran, it doesn't matter. The leash is going to be very short, especially for guys that haven't proven themselves at the NHL level. You're more likely to see a guy that proves each year he's a great player and then starts to struggle. You'll be like, okay, we know how good this guy is. We can't take him out of the lineup. But for a guy that hasn't proven themselves to anyone yet, doesn't play well, I'm sorry. You don't have that luxury of just figuring it out and taking 20 plus games because it's only it's a shortened season.
Yeah, that's a topic I'm definitely going to touch on with my Rangers wish list for the, you know, fake Christmas wish list. But for now, let's get into That's BS. We have a couple to get into. The first one is inconsistency in divisional talent. And this stood out to me because obviously Rangers fan, Islanders fan, the division that they're in is stacked, right? Yeah, you'd say the weakest team is the Devils, who are loaded with young talent and a good young goalie. So that's not an easy game by any means. Second weakest team is probably the Sabres, right? Who just got Taylor Hall. And then after that, it's a toss-up.
Second weakest team has got Taylor Hall, Eichel.
Yeah, they have two world-class players. So, I mean, and then you look at the Lightning, right? And granted, there's a couple of challenges there. You know, the Hurricanes, very good team. Columbus always battles hard, especially against Tampa Bay.
That's it.
And then Florida?
I see. You know, they bring in all these goalie coaches to help run this organization. I think to help Bobrovsky get comfortable, whatever the case may be. If Bobrovsky starts off terrible, we've seen their backup goalies are solid. Not, I don't think they're starter quality caliber yet, but they're really banking on this guy, Bobrovsky, having a complete bounce back year. The problem is they lost Dadonov. They lost a 25-plus score every year. They don't have Hoffman back yet. Well, does he go back? You know, we'll get to that a little bit later, but let's say they don't bring Hoffman back. So Bobrovsky does not have a good year. They don't have two elite scorers. I'm counting Dadonov as elite because he's as consistent as it comes at the NHL level, and Hoffman's an elite sniper. It's a tough division to win. I think that if Florida can figure it out early on, Bobrovsky's good. They have an easier chance of being a top four than the Islanders or the Rangers in a stacked division. But you look at this division and you got Minnesota, who has no idea what's going on there.
Well, there's rumor that they're going to be switching Minnesota or one other team with Dallas.
Okay. Then the division gets – oh, that's crazy. Dallas gets to play the Lightning 8 times after Lightning beat them in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Which is why I think it might happen.
Is that where they're going to do it, to monetize this, to make those games a lot more views?
Either that or they're going to flop St. Louis. But I personally – if they keep it the way it was when it was originally released, you would have the four best teams in the West in one division. So they would make it, but beat up on each other. And then you would have Tampa Bay with an easy ride. So I think if you add Dallas, say, to that division, swap Minnesota. Now, all of a sudden, Minnesota can compete in that division, maybe make a playoff spot. Dallas, Tampa Bay have that now created rivalry from the Cup. Makes it more enticing because the Canadian division and the Eastern division already are stacked with rivalries and talent.
I agree, but let's say it stays what it is now. I know they're talking – that would make a lot more sense, but look at it now. You got Tampa Bay's winning that division, probably. If they don't, shame on them.
Regardless, if Dallas gets in, they're winning the division.
Oh, yeah. Lightning, they're just on another stratosphere. But you look at this, and Detroit, no good. Chicago could surprise people, but not enough to win a division, let alone, I don't think, come in the top four. They're in a rebuild. They have stars still, you know, Taves, Kane, DeBrincat. I mean, they have guys. But you look at the other teams. Columbus is very good. Carolina is good. Nashville had an awful year last year, and they're like Florida. They have to bounce back. Everyone on their team has got to bounce back. Besides Yossi, he's got to keep doing what he's doing because he's phenomenal. But you got to see a lot more from this team. They have to be hungry because a slow start, they are in the gutter. They could be below a lot of these teams if they don't get off to a strong start. And you just look at this division, and it's an easier one to win. Now, let's say you put the Rangers or the Islanders in this division. It's still going to be tough to win. Tampa's just on a different planet. I think it would be Tampa Bay. I go Tampa Bay, Carolina, Columbus Blue Jackets, and then it's going to be a fight, I think, between Nashville and Florida. I don't think Minnesota. Again, Cam Talbot is such a big question mark for me. He just – it's a really gutsy signing where you are betting a lot of money that he works out. And if he doesn't, yeah, you got Stalock. But call this year a wash, because if he struggles early on and you realize that's a mistake, you don't have Zuccarello, you saw your captain Koivu gone, Parise was ready to go to the Islanders, he waived a no-trade clause, and maybe he doesn't want to be there. I know he's from Minnesota. It's going to be a tough year for Minnesota. And again, you got to play the Lightning 8 times.
Yeah, and that's without a change, which we might see anyway. I mean, nothing's been officially released yet, but it's tough when you look at some of these, because if they don't do the way that the divisional setup, the way the playoffs have been over the last 4 or 5 years, it's almost like a slight to the teams that are in that Eastern division, because there's 6 or 7 that could have legitimate chances of being playoff teams in any of the other divisions. I mean, we saw it this year with the Metro. The Rangers finished in 7th in the division, but they would have been a couple of points out of the playoff spot in the Atlantic and the West divisions as well. So,
yeah.
It's obviously you can't have a perfect playoff scenario, but having 4 teams from each one, and then you have 7 teams in a Canadian and the West one, it's tough, because then in that like division, you're only playing 7 teams. If there's a really weak team, which we see a couple of them have, it's just an unfair advantage.
I mean, you look at the, I guess, what is it? What are they calling the West division?
A Pacific USA, a Central USA, and an Eastern USA.
All right, so I guess the Anaheim one's the Pacific USA.
Yeah.
So this, I mean, you look at this division, and let's say they don't move Dallas. LA is probably going to be in the bottom of that one again. But then, I mean, Anaheim improved a little bit. They get Shattenkirk. They have some guys there that are talented. It's a question of let's put it all together. And Gibson's just such an – I think he's such an underrated goalie. We saw him play. And while I think Pittsburgh, they killed the Ducks, I think. He was standing taut, but he had no chance. And the problem is, are the Ducks wasting away Gibson's career? Is it like a Mike Trout situation in Anaheim? No less. Is it the same thing as we have such a high caliber guy that we are ruining his career? And the short answer is yes, because on any other team, he's carrying you to the play. On a team that's a right there team, you have Gibson in net, you're in the playoffs. And it's sad you don't get to see Gibson play in the playoffs, because you know how tremendous he would play in the spotlight. You look at this division, though. I mean, Colorado, Vegas, Dallas is still there. Those are your big three. Arizona's got a lot of question marks. San Jose's got a lot of question marks, too, because what are they? You know, goaltending, again, is a big thing. Jones or Dubnyk? Dumber. Like, you know, that's how I look at it. It's like, all right, which one's the best of the worst? Because both of them were terrible last year. Jones has been terrible for the last couple of years. But it all rides on these little things. You know, if Jones figures it out and gets back to when he was, you know, dominant and getting them to the cup final and that team was good, yes, they've lost key pieces like a Pavelski, which is one of the best guys in front. I mean, you see his practices. I can't believe he deflects the pucks the way he does. But that's why he's in the NHL and we're talking about him. St. Louis too is in this division again. Binnington, we might as well have a whole segment maybe next week about like goalies, make it or break it, because
you give too much of a slight to Binnington. No, his numbers weren't that bad.
2.52, I think, last year.
It wasn't bad at all.
No, it wasn't bad, but when it mattered, he was terrible.
And 4 postseason games after a hiatus.
Oh no, yeah, I'm not gonna be like, all right, I still think he's a one and done.
They're making the postseason.
I think he's an Andrew Hammond. Yeah, they're gonna make the postseason.
No, Andrew Hammond never played in the NHL again at a competitive level. He just said he had a 2.52 last year.
Yeah, I just think that this postseason just showed what he actually is. I remember
after a layoff a bubble.
I don't see him as that good enough. God. I think he had a great ride. Don't get me wrong. I don't think we'll ever see him to that level again, and he'll be a solid goaltender at the NHL level.
Most goalies never reach that level, let alone again. So 2.52 is very good. No. If he can get to the postseason and then without a hiatus and just be able to play on a consistent basis, he's not putting up those numbers.
Let me ask you something, though. No Jake Allen. You still think that this guy can handle the majority of the workload and get them into the playoffs? Like, you still believe that he will be good enough?
He did last year.
Fair enough. But Jake Allen was very good. I know Jake Allen didn't play a lot, but he was very good.
He was. And he definitely alleviated some of the pressure. And I'm not saying that Jordan Binnington was a phenomenal goaltender last year. I'm saying that he was good enough for St. Louis Blues team to get to the postseason. And I think that his playoff numbers were very skewed.
But you're talking about top four in this division. So clearly it's going to be, I would think, Vegas, Dallas, Colorado. You think it's a lock for St. Louis to have that fourth spot?
Yes. I don't see. And first of all, they add Krug. You lose Pietrangelo. Fine. That's still a very good team.
Oh, yeah. Don't get me wrong. It's a very good team. I just don't have faith in Binnington.
Okay. That's fair. But who in that division would beat him? Like, would beat the Blues out of that fourth spot?
No. I mean, you're right. Maybe Arizona. Maybe.
No. They lost Taylor Hall. They have no picks. They had that whole debacle with their draft pick this offseason. I don't think they have anything left.
But so let's say St. Louis does make it. You think they do damage in the playoffs, or do you think they're going to be one
there's,
of the
There's a high – first of all, before I make playoff predictions, I want to see what the official seeding's going to look like. I want to see, you know, if it's really 4-4-4-4, if they're going to do a one from each like if there's a one Pacific, a one East, and they have a little bracket like that, or if it's just going to be a 1-8 reseeding. So before I make my playoff, but yes, there is a chance that depending on who St. Louis gets in the first round, they could make it. Like, I think they could potentially beat a Dallas in the first round. Ooh. I still think that they're that good of a team.
No, I think they're that good. It comes down to who's going to pick up the leadership slack. They have a ton of leaders on that team, but again, they lose their captain. That's a big thing. But, you know, again, I don't think Bennington's going to have it this year. You think he's good enough? I guess we'll find out in front of us. In a couple of minutes, Christian Arnold of NYI Hockey Now will join us. We will talk Islanders, but until he gets on, let's continue. So non-committal to outdoor games. You know, we've heard a bunch of teams that say, you know, this is a good idea. And we talked last week about what it would do to fill arenas, all that stuff. But I think it really comes down to the league is the amount of money it does cost to put a thing like this together.
Yeah, no, I think that is a big part too. But we talked about the possibility of them doing like 3 and 4, right? So if they have a location, like say Boston, say they do it at, you know, the Fenway Park. If you could have three of those teams travel there or six teams travel there, or even all eight in that division travel there for a weekend, and you could do four games, right? You have now you're filling four games worth of fans. You could do it day and night. And I mean, now granted, everything has to work smoothly. They got to set it up. They got to work that out. But to not really hear about this becoming more of a likelihood and likely scenario because they didn't have a Winter Classic.
Yeah.
So they didn't have their Stadium Series game. So obviously they usually have 3 to 4 a year. Why not have 3 to 4 now and get some fans back in? Because you already know that I think Tampa Bay announced that they're going to have some type of fans. The places that are more open are probably going to have fans. So you're going to make some money there as a league. Why not have a couple of big games? Because fans, especially outside, would be dying. Even if it's 20% capacity with mass, you're selling out that 20%.
No, I mean, fans are long. And I think with states that you can travel in and out of, you might see, let's say, Islander fans traveling to other cities in the division or the states in the division to see them play. Because we're in New York. I mean, the likelihood of us going being allowed to go to Islander, Ranger, Saber games is very, very slim right now. And as it gets worse, you know, they're closing outdoor dining.
At least till the postseason.
Yeah, it's going to be tough. But if you're a fan that, you know, you're not too worried and you think that, okay, I want to go to games. I mean, there are options. You'll see teams having fans. It just, an outdoor game would be great. I think TV-wise would be great. They could sell new jerseys for the outdoor games, which, you know, is a big money maker. So, you know, it's an interesting thought. It just, we have, you know, we're not the ones looking at the finances, but it is very expensive to put this together. And if you're not going to, you know, if you need 20% capacity and the league doesn't think that that's financially makes any sense, that might sway them away from doing it. And the fact, like you said, that we haven't heard enough about it now, or we're getting ready for the season to start, probably means it won't happen. But again, you never know. You never know. The league could be secretive for a reason about this stuff. They might want to be a big surprise to the fan base and get people, you know, get those people that are ready to click right now and buy the tickets. That way they don't be like, don't let it marinate. You know, yeah. If you're going to marinate about a certain thing, then it's like, all right, maybe I shouldn't do this. But if you go, bam, outdoor game, a month from now, get your tickets now, they're running out. Click, 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 click.
Well, I mean, we saw the Winter Classic in Dallas, right? Obviously, that's a warmer climate. Fans might be allowed to be there anyway. So why don't they go to one of those warmer areas where fans can be and have essentially their Winter Classic there? Because there's more football stadiums there, especially in the South. Football stadiums, 50 to 60,000, 20% capacity. You're talking about close to what a hockey stadium is, a hockey arena is anyway. So you're still making a good amount of money, especially in gate revenue, and you could charge a little more for those tickets. To me, not having at least one is a missed opportunity. And I think there should be at least 2 to 3.
I mean, this is the year to do that. You know, we were talking about, you know, weeks ago, what things to try out in the league. This is not like joke of a year. Don't get me wrong. But if you want to, you know, if you think that having more outdoor games this year might work and help benefit, now it's time to do it. Because next year, if we have an issue with COVID and, you know, fans still can't come and you have a full season, you know, it might, it's hard. But anyway, Christian Arnold is here to talk Islanders hockey with us. So let's welcome him to the show. Get a little sip of water before you talk. Christian, how are you doing today?
What's going on? Excuse me. And that's exactly why I was taking that sip of water. How's it going, gentlemen?
It's going good. I mean, it's been a tough week, but, you know, we get through it. A little BS here and there. But thanks for joining us today to talk some Islanders hockey.
You know, I'm always happy to do it.
All right, so let's kick it off. January 13th, hockey will start. Barzal has not been signed as of yet. How long do you think it'll take till we see him officially back in blue and orange?
Yeah, no, I think it's a good question. I'm sure it's one that's been on everybody's mind because there's such a vested interest. And Matt Barzal's return. And I mean, at this point, I would imagine it's going to move pretty quickly. It's something actually Sean Cuthbert and I were talking about on you know, Hockey Night in New York the other night that we recorded yesterday about when we're going to see Matt Barzal sign. I think once you see as a plan in place and you see that's, you know, that this January 13th date is for real. You're going to see a lot of pieces, I think, move pretty quickly. Matt Barzal being one of them, especially for the Islanders. They also have to have, you know, they're also most likely re-signing Matt Martin. You know, Andy Green is most likely to return. You also have the Corey Schneider trade that, Corey Schneider signing that is basically a done deal. So all these little pieces that have also been waiting to be taken care of, but Matt Barzal obviously is the biggest piece and the first thing that they take care of. And I think that happens pretty quickly once the season is official and everything's in place.
I spoke to a couple of fans on Twitter and I had this idea that I think the deal has been done for a while. I think Lamoriello is just a secretive guy. And I think that he's just waiting for the right time for the league to team to announce it. Do you think that's even a possibility that's already been done?
You know, there's anything's possible. I think as everyone's seen, Lou Lamoriello operates by a different standard. And certainly anything that gets leaked is very rare. So there's a possibility, but I don't think that they would have waited this long and kept people in the dark this long, especially considering the circumstances. I think the Johnny Boychuk thing was obviously, you know, a big indicator that they were starting to come up with a plan to how to execute getting Matt Barzal, Matt Barzal back on team at a fair price. You know, I'm sure negotiations and some conversations have been going on, but obviously as everyone kind of knows, Lou Lemerill likes these negotiations to take place behind closed doors. He doesn't appreciate it, to say the least, when news starts to filter out. So there's a possibility. I don't necessarily know if I...
Oh, we lost him on the mic. We lost you for a second. You just repeat what you just said? The last little part.
No. I was just saying there's nothing's ever really off the table with Lou because you know the can you hear me guys?
Yeah, we can
hear you now.
Hello?
Yep. Can you hear us?
Okay. I can hear you guys. All I was getting at was that
he's going in and out.
All right, we'll continue. Oh, we lost him. And he's back. Can you hear us now?
Okay. Yes, can you hear me better?
Yes. Brendan, ask the next question. So,
all right. So obviously, we got a shortened camp coming up, but there's going to be a lot of competition in that camp. So, do you think that there are going to be people competing for spots alongside Peugeot on the third line, and who do you think will be alongside him come opening night?
Yeah, I think that it's interesting. The third line is really going to be the only. It's really the only question mark, I guess you could say. For what's where players are going to be. I think that Peugeot, obviously, you know, he's the guy that's going to be your center on that third line. And then everything else is kind of up in the air because you don't necessarily know who's returning, who's going to not be there. But obviously, when it comes to spots, excuse me, when it comes to spots there, your first thought is Oliver Wahlstrom, perhaps Kiefer Bellows, again, kind of the fallout from that. A situation that happened over the summer is still yet to be seen totally. But, those guys are certainly players that come to mind when you think of guys that are going to compete for a spot there. And then obviously it depends on who comes back and, who's still on the roster. But certainly Oliver Wahlstrom is and Kiefer Bellows to a certain extent as well. Those are guys that are going to be in the conversation. And I think that should be a bit of excitement for the New York Islanders. Both guys, had pretty good years, especially towards the end of it. In their development down in Bridgeport. Wahlstrom obviously got a couple games early in the year. Bellows just here later in the season. And I think the growth in their game when talking to Brent Thompson a month or two ago was really evident in his eyes, and I think it'll be very evident for Islander fans once they see him in camp. Wahlstrom, too, has benefited from the fact that he's been playing overseas. Obviously, he had a little bit of an injury there, and he was sidelined a little bit, but 10 games overseas in the second division league in Sweden is not a bad developmental strategy by any stretch of the imagination. And it seemed like things were going pretty well there. He had something about, I want to say 8 points in those 10 games that he was there. And obviously now he's headed back to the U.S. So, if there's going to be spots that are competed for, it's that third line. It's going to be those third line wings because everyone knows Peugeot is going to be playing. It's just a matter of who's playing alongside him.
No, I completely agree. I think Wahlstrom definitely should have a spot alongside Peugeot. And then you have the issue with, all right, maybe Ross Johnson, Michael Dalco, where do these pieces fit in? But definitely great. That's great insight there. Thank you. In a tough division that we have right now, do you believe, I know you're not high on predictions, I already know this, but do you think the Islanders will finish in the top four in the division? Because I know this year it's the top four teams making it.
Now, did you like that answer in your little Q&A that you sent me for that story for Puck Bros? Because I thought I was pretty funny at that moment. I thought that was a pretty clever comment I sent back to you.
Yeah, so let me just say what the comment was. So I asked him about predictions about this upcoming season and what the record would be. And he said, very funny, I laughed out loud, is that he's not too high on predictions because he wants to make people think that he knows what he's talking about. So if he predicts wrong, it looks bad. But if Christian, you predicted, what did he predict?
Right.
He predicted something. What was it? Eberle was going to score the game winner. You predicted something back on the show.
Oh, that's right. I do remember that. Yeah. It was Eberle scoring a goal that night. What did he do? He scored.
You're 100%. You're batting 1,000 when you come on the BS Sports Show. So,
I should just leave it alone then because batting 1,000%. I mean, why go out on a down note? But, I think it's interesting. So I saw the question. It's an interesting one because you look at the division that the Islanders are going to be playing in this kind of – I guess what we could call the Northeast division for lack of anything more creative. But I'm certainly open to suggestions if you guys have some of them, because just calling it the Northeast sounds really boring. And I think this is an opportunity where we could have a lot of fun with this. So, but you look at this Northeast division. Yeah. I'd be all for it. I think that if like you were talking before, about the outdoor games, not to get sidetracked, but you guys were talking about playing more outdoor games this year of all years would make the most sense. I mean, why not bring the old names back? I mean, this year there's, it's the time to be creative. The NHL is one of the least creative leagues out there. If there was any chance for them to get creative or an opportunity, now's the time. I'll be all for it. But you look at this Northeast division, for lack of a more creative term, and you look at the top teams in it. Boston's going to be there for sure. Boston, basically, if I was a betting man, Boston is guaranteed, in the top slot in that division. I mean, this is a team that's put up 100-plus points for the last three seasons. They've had the Islanders' number for the last couple seasons. I think dating back to 2014, you know, they have a pretty impressive record against the New York Islanders. And then you look at the other opponents that the Islanders normally face, you know, the Pittsburgh Penguins, the Washington Capitals, Philadelphia Flyers. You know, those are teams that people automatically think playoff contenders, top of their division. So you're contending with, and then, you know, not that's not to discount the New York Rangers and the New Jersey Devils, who are going to get better. The New York Rangers, who are, you know, right there, you know, they were a point behind the Islanders, but, you know, a point away from jumping them when COVID came in and shut everything down. And, you know, you could only imagine New Jersey is going to get better. You can only imagine Buffalo is going to get better now. I think we say that every year about Buffalo, and then you see what happens. But still, you know, theoretically, you know, they're bound to get a little bit better. So it's a tough division. It's a tough time. One thing, I guess you could say, that they have going for them is the fact that, you know, Pittsburgh, while I don't want to say that they're kind of on a downward trajectory, they're certainly past the prime of where they used to be as far as a contender goes. You know, Washington, it's still the Washington Capitals, so you can't discount them. And Philadelphia is a talented, tough team, and you can't discount them. But from what the Islanders showed in the postseason last year, you know, they can play with everybody when they're rolling. It's going to be tough. To answer your actual question here, I will say that they do finish in the top four, but I'd say they finish probably in that fourth slot.
I would agree. I would have to agree. If they're going to make it, it's probably going to be as the fourth seed. And Brendan, that probably means, you know, we're leaving out your Rangers here.
Sorry. I have no expectation for the Rangers. We talked about this in this division with only four teams making it.
That's
It's tough.
Know if that's fair either, because
Christian.
I was just saying, I don't even know if it's fair to leave the Rangers out of this conversation, because I mean, you look at the talent; they're gonna get better. You know, you're talking about a team that now has, you know, a two top two picks in the last couple of years. Ilya Shesterkin is going to be really good. The goaltender of the future there for the Rangers, which makes it really interesting for the Islanders and Ilya Sorokin. Igor Shesterkin is who I meant. And so I don't think it's that far off to say the Rangers are going to be competitive, and they could theoretically be right there with the Islanders and that fourth slot competing. You know, if they take that next step, they were there taking that step the last season as the rest of the year was progressing. And unfortunately for them, you know, they kind of got screwed by COVID. Of all the teams that really took a hit, the Rangers, I think, got the biggest whiff, because they had been in such a good spot and they'd been on such a roll at that point, that by the time they came back, the momentum that they had from that where the position, you know, really gained a lot of momentum from just being able to take a step back, take a breath, get a full training camp under them, basically, and get those guys who had just joined the team into the system properly. So I don't know. I think the Rangers could be right there in the conversation. I know that's not going to make too many Islander fans happy with me, but, you know, that's my thought on it.
I mean, with eight games against them, it could come down to the last game of the season. These teams neck and neck for that fourth spot.
Yeah.
Got a Ranger Islander game. That's probably what we can hope for. At the end of the day, yes, you want the Islanders to be a lot better than the Rangers, but competitiveness down to the wire to the last game in a shortened COVID season would be unreal.
Well, I will say that, in my opinion, if the Rangers can take care and beat and win the season series against the Penguins and the Islanders, I think they make the playoffs. And that might sound obvious, but they're not going to beat the Flyers. They struggle against the Flyers, particularly over the last three seasons. And the Capitals, they'll be even with. They always play hard, but I can't see them winning that. The Boston Bruins are a better team than pretty much everyone else in that division, including Washington. So if they can make it where they have a winning record against the Islanders and Penguins, then yes, it is them. But that's a lot easier said than done. Those are two pretty good teams as well. So it'll be interesting to see. But you mentioned Ilya Sorokin. How many starts do you think he has this season? And do you think he's going to need an adjustment period?
I think there's going to be a bit of an adjustment period. I mean, obviously the game in Europe and Russia is much different than the game in North America and the NHL. So I think there is a bit of a grace period that we got to give Sorokin here to kind of adjust and get used to it. I could say because of the obviously the circumstances, you know, it's going to be such a short season. So when you think about it, 10 and 15 games isn't a ton, but because of, you know, we're most likely looking at a 56 game season, it makes those games so much more important for the Islanders. And you know, like Brendan was saying, if this is if these are games where, you know, they're all division rivals, so this, you know, there's not going to be an easy game. You know, we can kind of poke fun at the Buffalo Sabres, we can kind of poke fun at the New Jersey Devils for how bad they've been the last couple of years, but even those games, when you see a team eight times a year during the regular season, it makes it tough. It makes all those games tough, and it makes all those starts tough. So it's certainly going to be interesting to see how many starts he gets, but I'd say that 10-15 mark probably makes the most sense, especially for a guy that's in his first year, for a guy that's going to be adjusting to the North American game, especially, again, like I was saying, the meaning behind all these games now becomes so much more important than just what it would be in an 82-game schedule where you could kind of get away with 10-15 games, maybe that weren't his best, or you could kind of get away with games that maybe are a little more sloppy. Here, you know, you don't have that luxury.
So the last question for us, for you, Christian, is, you know, we've seen teams have success in the postseason and then, you know, really have letdowns the following year. Do you think the Islanders can avoid this? I know last year during the regular season, it was a streaky season. They had, for the majority of the season, it was bad streaky. They weren't scoring and all that stuff. They had the 10-game win streak, 17-game point streak. But do you think that we could see a letdown, or you think, given the situation, Taraz will have these guys ready to go?
You know, I would expect that Taraz is going to have everyone ready to go. I think the saving grace, I guess, for lack of a better word here, is that everybody isn't in the same boat. You know, we're going to start a season where I can't imagine we're having any preseason games. You know, it's going to be a 2-week training camp for, you know, all these teams that had playoff experience last year. With, you know, some of those other teams that didn't make the postseason getting a little extra time to practice. But I mean, you know, I'm sure you guys watch a lot of hockey. You know, I watch a lot of hockey. We've seen what those first two games in a preseason game, look like after a long summer, and they're never pretty. And I think when the playoffs started last summer, and I was on with you guys, I think I had a similar comment, and I was kind of proven wrong. But you know, I think here it's safe to say that those first couple games for everybody are not going to be pretty hockey by any stretch of the imagination. There's only so much you can do in training camp and getting guys ready, but there's nothing that beats going out there and playing, even if it's just a preseason game, and kind of getting those little intricacies down more pat before the regular season starts. So it'll be interesting. I think, like I said, the saving grace is that the fact that everybody is starting off kind of on the same footing. Those first couple games are not going to be pretty for anybody, I would imagine. And I think the Islanders, because, you know, I think they'll be riding the high from the momentum they got last year from the postseason. I think you're seeing, you know, when Anders Lee is made available to the media, when other guys are made available to the media, you're seeing that experience stuck with them. The fact that they were there, they were a couple wins away from going to the stand, you know, that experience has clearly stuck with them. And it's a driving force. Those guys are hungry now. You know, that was the first time for a lot of them, you know, career Islanders, that they made it that far in the postseason. They made it to an Eastern Conference final. And you could tell, I mean, I'm sure you remember in September, the emotion that was there after they lost that game, you know, to the Tampa Bay Lightning. And I think that's just been a driving force ever since. So I would imagine between Barry Trotz being the coach that he is, and just the drive and energy that the players seem to have from that run to the postseason, that run through the postseason, you know, they're not going to let that momentum slip away too far, and they're not going to let that letdown like you've seen in the past. I think this is a much different New York Islanders team, much to that being the case this time around.
Well, Christian, thanks so much for joining us. As always, we appreciate your insight. Guys, you can follow Christian on Twitter at Christian_Arnold02 and check him out at NYI Hockey Now. And also, he's got a podcast too. What is it? Hockey Night New York, right? Yes, Christian, Hockey Night.
Hockey Night in New York. And I think my Twitter handle is actually C.
C_Arnold02.
It's 01.
Okay, guys, 01. Don't do 02. You won't find him. Christian, thanks so much for joining us again, and we'll talk to you real soon.
Happy to do it, guys.
See ya. Before we get to anything else, you know what's BS, Brendan?
Is your Wi-Fi?
A bunch of freaking money for what? No, this not even the Wi-Fi. I am connected into my router. I guarantee, Christian. I mean,
the hamster's not running on the wheel right now.
No, he took a break. Maybe he tested positive for COVID and took a break. He couldn't breathe, you know, running too fast. It's just ridiculous how much you pay. I mean, yes, I don't pay for it as of now, but I will have to pay for it. And if it runs like this, when it's out of my pocket, out of my parents' pocket, I can live with, because again, it's not my money. I don't have a complete job where I can pay for it. But fix the freaking Wi-Fi. It's like Spectrum at school, Brendan. This is what I feel like. You know, we had Spectrum at school. And for those of you who have Spectrum, I don't know if you have Spectrum in the middle of freaking nowhere, New York. It is flat out terrible, and that's what I feel like right now. I get booted left and right. I don't know if the hockey gods are saying, all right, you know, they weren't happy about my Binghamton take. Maybe that was what it was, and they're like, all right, this guy can't talk anymore. But Brendan, my God, Wi-Fi. That's what I want for, you know, Hanukkah's right now. Happy Hanukkah, by the way, to everyone celebrating it. I celebrate it. Brendan celebrated. Excuse me. Whatever. You got a dog. Congratulations. You got a little puppy there. I'm asking from Hanukkah Harry, you know, the Bush. Give me good Wi-Fi. I need good Wi-Fi and a healthy life. That's it. That's all I want. Good Wi-Fi and a healthy life. That's the rhyme. Like good Wi-Fi, healthy life. That's the rhyme, I think. Anyway.
In 2020 it is, yeah.
Let's get to hometown hockey, because we got a lot to discuss.
We do. So obviously we're gonna dive into the Rangers and Islanders. We're gonna give a couple of takes. We have our top moments from each team, top five moments I should say, from the 2019-20 season, and then we're also going to do a little wish list later on of what we need to see and want the Islanders and Rangers to get and have in the 2021 season. So kicking things off with the New York Rangers top moments from 5-1, opening night for me is number 5. Artemi Panarin scored, Jacob Trouba scored. And I just remember Jacob Trouba going bar down. That goal will forever be engraved in my head on his former team, the celly that he had. Mika Zibanejad breakaway on the backhand. Just an awesome game. I think it was a 6-5 final. Just a crazy score back and forth. Crazy way to start the year. Mark Stahl even scored in that game, which, you know, it's a crazy game when Mark Stahl scores on the wraparound. Fans were so nervous after what to expect. Like, we had so many expectations that were high. Is Kako going to be great? Panarin has to live up to the money. Trouba's got to be good. And legitimately, everything that could have went right in that game did. And now, granted, over the course of the season, didn't pan out the way everyone hoped. But it really, you got a glimpse into the talent level that they could have as a team.
Before you go to your fourth, you know who had an awful opening night?
Who?
The Devils. Do you remember the opening night?
Oh, my God, yes.
They played Winnipeg. I think they blew a 3-0 lead. They were up by a lot. Winnipeg comes back, goes to overtime in the shootout. Scheifele and Connor dangle the living hell out of
Blackwood. Yep.
That you couldn't have had two different nights. You had the Rangers, who the new star shines. You had the Devils blow a lead and get absolutely embarrassed in a shootout, which two of the filthiest moves I've ever seen. It was crazy. I don't remember. I have short memory loss. I don't remember how the Islanders did opening night. They probably lost. I think they lost 1-0 to the Capitals, actually. It was against the Capitals, if my memory is correct, which these days, man. But, Devil, I remember we were watching it at school. We may or may not have bet on the game. I don't know. But we watched that happen. We watched the demise of the Devils. Like, oh, it's going to be a new year for the Devils. Look at this. 3-0 lead on Winnipeg. Boom.
Gone.
So, yeah, go to your number 4, Brendan.
So my number 4 is Lundqvist gets his last shutout with the Rangers against Detroit. And for a year, I think, I was screaming, please just get this guy one more shutout. Derek Stepan talked about all the time how when he used to get shutouts, he would do a wine bottle giveaway on the bus or flight home or wherever they were. That's how much he appreciated the defense in front of him. And he hadn't been able to do any of that in a long time because the defense was terrible and he was aging. And he finally got one last shutout, and it was awesome to see. Number 3, Artemi Panarin's 5-point game against the New York Islanders. It was just a big big, big F you to the Islanders fans. You couldn't sign him, and he just went off against your team. The Rangers fans rejoiced that night. Let me tell you, that was a butt whooping, and he looked really good in that game. Number two, the Rangers come from behind against Montreal. Every single Rangers fan remembers this, especially the Lemieux goal where he's flying through the air to tie it up. And all of a sudden, Jacob Trouba takes a no-angle shot from the boards off a draw that finds its way in off like bodies and stuff, and they erased a four-goal deficit. Just a crazy all-around game, and we were screaming because I thought it was over. Next thing you know, we turn it back on, and they're within two. Then they're tied. Oh, my God, this is actually happening.
We watched this at school, too. I remember we were about to go out to the bar.
And, we watched it at school. We said we're not going out till this game ends. After we thought we were going to wind up going early, but we went late. And my number one moment, of course, I think this might be every Rangers fan's number one moment, Mika Zibanejad's five-goal game. Very rare do you see anybody score five goals. Very rare do you see anybody score five goals, including the overtime game winner. And very rare do you see anybody score five goals on an overtime game winner like that.
I feel like I have a story for everything. I don't know if you were already at the hockey tournament, but we were on our way to a hockey tournament.
I watched his overtime goal in an elevator.
Okay, so I didn't watch while I was driving, but the kid I was with, shout out to Luca Colombano, great guy. He was watching on his phone. And we were probably 2 hours away. This was middle of the game. We were probably 2 hours away from where we had to go. And all of a sudden, it was dead stop traffic. We literally got out of our car and just walked down and was dancing. Dead stop. And this kid is trying to connect. There's no Wi-Fi. Again, you're in the middle of nowhere. Trying to connect. And he turns the game on. And it's with minutes left in the third when Zibanejad got his fourth. I think it was late in the third. And he calls dad and goes, "Dad, Zibanejad's getting in overtime. He's getting in overtime." And I remember I'm driving, and all of a sudden he grabs me and starts screaming and shaking me, and I'm with the wheel. Unfortunately, no one's on the road in the middle of nowhere, which is great. Going, "Zibanejad," in my house. "You got to be kidding me." And I watch the goal, filthy move. You know, when you're on, you're on. Some nights you just cannot be stopped. Like Austin Matthews in his first NHL game.
Yep.
I mean, you are on. Yes, they lost that game to the Senators. But when you're on, and Zibanejad showed all year how good he is. You know, Ottawa is one thing. You can show how good you are on a bad team because you get more playing time. Same way you look at Pageau. Pageau is not Zibanejad. Well, he's a very good player, Pageau. Zibanejad was a steal the Rangers got, and he is he's just so talented, and he's on Broadway, and he's shining bright. And yeah, that's really all you can say about it.
And the reason I remember, by the way, that we were at a roadie that weekend was because that was my first weekend back from my knee injury and my last weekend playing hockey too. Thank you to COVID. This was the week before we went home.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was. The game was March 5th.
Oh, so it was when we lost in triple overtime.
Yeah, this was our playoff week, and we lost in triple OT. Came back for St. Patrick's Day at Cortland, at least.
You know, talk about BS. Every year on my birthday, we graduated now, which is so sad, Brendan. We'll be back there in March. But every year, my birthday weekend, we had a tournament, and it was either you win the championship or you're losing on your birthday. That's how it was. And as a goalie, that's a lot of pressure because you hate being disappointed on your birthday. And this game fell on my birthday, and it went to triple OT. I think I had 75 or 85 saves. I don't know.
We lost. It was a crazy game.
We lost. It was lost on. I remember how it went in. We lost on a one timer that I did a split blocker save, and it like just snuck seven hole blocker side, and no one knew where the puck was. Everyone's looking around. I think I have it. I felt it, and it goes in. And it just every year, my parents are like, "Oh, happy birthday!" I'm like, "Yeah, go beep yourself. I don't want to be anywhere. I think I got hammered at the bar," whatever.
Stefan, you could have stopped it.
Stop it. Not now. Anyway, let's move on to the Islanders' top moments. And I started off with my number five. Cole Bardreau gets his first NHL goal. And it came on a penalty shot November 5th against Ottawa. It was against Anderson in goal. And I know, remember how the goal went in? He shot at five hole. It bounced in. The celebration was great. And for this kid, okay, this is a kid that he played 4 years at Cornell. It was either his junior or senior year. He breaks his neck on the ice. Finishes the game with a broken neck. He didn't know it was broken. And then afterwards, went to the hospital, broken. It was a three-month rehab before he got back on the ice. He got back to playing. He spent 6 years in the AHL, five with the Lehigh Valley Phantoms. That's the Flyers AHL team. And then 1 year with Bridgeport. He gets called up. Scores a goal and a penalty shot. Your first goal coming via a penalty. That's a lot of pressure. And against probably 20 of the 30 goals in the NHL that's not going in. It was a seeing eye shot. It trickled in, but a goal is a goal. And the self-just emotion, it's such a feel-good story. And yes, Cole Bardreau is not a young player anymore. You know, his chances at the NHL level are probably slim. But to do what he did, it was an awesome moment to see. Number four, you know, I have some playoff stuff in here. It's a little out of order depending on how you felt, but number four for me was Matt Barzal wins in an OT against the Caps to take game three. And that gave the Islanders a commanding 3-0 series lead. And yes, Holpe should have stopped it. If I was a goalie, which I'm not at the NHL, but you know, hypothetically, if I was, I am poke checking that. That puck is not beating me that way. I'm poke checking that off his stick because Barzal came in red hot from an angle. But Holpe, you know, Holpe. I've said enough about him. He scores a goal. But for me, it wasn't so much the goal. Yes, it was amazing. It just put the Islanders more on the map at, wow, you know, they beat Florida. That's one thing. They had Florida. I think they were even against Florida all year. They showed during the Florida series they were better than Florida.
Yeah.
That's fine. Now you're going against the juggernaut Caps. It's the Capitals, yes. You know, whatever round robin it was, they play the Capitals. And it's still against Ovechkin, who is, I think he's a point per game player still against the Islanders over his entire career. And they shut down the Capitals. I mean, the series ended 4-1, so they did get a game. But this just showed, wow, the Islanders 3-0 series lead against Ovechkin and the talent that the Capitals have. They're up 3-0. I think it just made Islander fans very proud. Yes, again, the series ended 4-1. We know the whole entire playoff ended. But it just showed that this team was taking steps in the right direction. Now, we talked about it how that wasn't the Capitals. You know, that wasn't the Capitals' firing all cylinders. They struggled mightily. Three players scored. I think it was Oshie. It was Oshie, Ovechkin, I think it was Kuznetsov. Backstrom didn't play due to an injury that he sustained in game one of that series. Matt Martin, questionable hit. Whatever the case may be, he didn't play. This wasn't the same team. Ty Reardon gets fired. But you still got to go out there and play. And they still shut down a guy like Ovechkin, who has done in his career against the Islanders, put his team on his back like Zibanejad did with the 5 goals, and carried his team. It's happened. And they found a way to, you know, shut them down. I thought it was very cool to see as a fan because the Capitals had the Islanders' numbers. The last game of the season they played, the Islanders didn't blow a lead, which they had blown previously in an embarrassing loss. They don't blow a lead. It was just a great stepping stone. Number three for me is Islanders beat the Flyers 4-0 in game 7. Thomas Greiss stopped 16 of 16. Again, it's one of those statements. This was a back and forth series. This is a very good Flyers team, a Flyers team that won the round robin. And Brendan, I don't know if you remember, but we started before the round robin. I said the Flyers are going to somehow find a way to win this round robin and get the number one seed. I don't know if you remember it. We'll find it in the draft somewhere in one of the early episodes.
They should have. I mean, based on the way they finished the season, but then they wasted all their talent on the round robin.
No, fair enough.
Because they looked like crap after.
A back and forth series, and the Islanders come out and they play Islanders hockey to a T. They allow 16 shots on goals. They capitalize when need be 4-0. Again, wow, the Islanders are legit. They just took out. This Flyers team was a very good team. Now, granted, again, a lot of their top players just didn't do what they needed to do.
No one did.
No one did, but that's playoff hockey for you. You got to come and show up, and the Islanders did that. They handled them. Number two for me is Varlamov sets Islanders' franchise record for longest playoff shutout streak at 138 minutes and 17 seconds. So he had a shutout in Game 5 against the Caps and in Game 1 against the Flyers. He carried it into Game 2. He only needed was 40 seconds to break the record, which was held by Billy Smith, 136-59. He does that with under 2 minutes to play. I think it was 157. Kevin Hayes scores, ends the streak. Floodgates open on Varlamov, seems to struggle, and obviously, you knew, we talked about it, at one point, the goals were going to come, and it happened to be in this game, but this was a game the Islanders could win. They came back, they tie it up, they go to overtime, unfortunately, they do lose in overtime, but nevertheless, Varlamov etches himself in the Islanders' history books, and he played phenomenal up until that point. Luckily, Greiss stepped in. Greiss played well, too. Unfortunately, they lose. They win the game they had to in Game 7. Number one for me is what happened during the regular season, and yes, you could talk about them. In the Stanley, the Eastern Conference Finals, yes, we know how good the Lightning were. They found a way to win a couple of games again. Injuries, key injuries for Lightning players, give or take. Could the Islanders have won them in Philly strength? We don't have to talk about that because it is what it is. It happened. But 10-game winning streak, 17-game point streak. While that was happening, of course, it was a mediocre season taking that away. But that run, it was just – you saw a different side of this Islander team where it was just dominance. And when you think of a 17-game point streak, you could have a bunch of losses in overtime. Now, this was a team that was 15-0-2, and they weren't blowing teams out. These were close, hardened games, what I think makes this even more impressive because it wasn't like they didn't have to waste energy and they were killing teams left and right. These were grueling victories, and they came out on top. And in years past, when they didn't have tries, when it was Capuano or – you know, guys like that, Doug Waite, those leads that they had late were being blown every single night. It was just a fact. They would play two-thirds of a hockey game, and in the last couple of minutes, they'd fall apart. The team would score, either win in regulation or lose in over, or get beat in overtime. it just showed the transformation of this team under Trotz, where they have a lead, they're shutting the door. And of course, after this, we saw a Pelech injury was big. Islanders offense stopped scoring. I mean, everything that could go wrong went wrong, and they make that expanded postseason, but the run they went on was just phenomenal. The hockey fan, and let alone not even an Islander fan, just looking what, you know, they say defense wins championship, and the Islanders games are boring. And
they are.
In fact, if you're not an Islander fan, they're boring, but you've seen the Islanders year after year out just lose in such the worst ways possible that we are completely okay as Islander fans seeing a boring game as long as it comes away with 2 points, because we know the way they play like that under Trotz is why they made it to the Eastern Conference Finals and why they fell just two games shy of a Stanley Cup Final. For both the Rangers and the Islanders, there were times this year, and we didn't get to all of them, obviously. It's hard to remember everything that's happened. Not going to lie, I had to go back into one of my articles I wrote on my top 10 moments of the season to make sure, just to make sure I got those little ones. But, I mean, you look at the Islanders and Rangers, it's winning. It's winning now. The Rangers are right there. It's going to be competitive this year, but you're no longer going to see brutal, brutal games, maybe here and there, but these are teams that are set to be competitive game in and game out, whoever the opponent is. Yes, the Bruins. They played 8 times. The Bruins have had the Islanders' number more often than not over the last couple of years. The Rangers said the same thing with teams they play. Pittsburgh, right? You said the Flyers, excuse me.
The Flyers. No, the Rangers handle or are close to every other team in that division. But exactly, the Flyers dominate them.
But there should be no more in the next couple of years. Losing season should be well past this team. Now, granted, 56-game season, you know, a New York team could come close to that just given the situation, but this is a team that's, all right, they're playoff contending every single year. Stanley Cup final run, you know, it depends. He's how the team do and the acquisitions they have over the next couple of years and how the young guys play. But we're talking about a 5 to 10 year period right now where at least one of these New York teams is going to be going deep into playoff runs, I would think. And yes, Islanders are a little bit older than the Rangers.
I don't want to see anybody go deep. I want to see them win a cup.
No, I mean,
going deep is nothing. It's meaningless.
No, but for a Rangers team right now that coming off getting swept.
I don't want to see them go deep. I've seen them go deep too many times. I've seen the Rangers go far. I've seen them get to a cup. You got to win, right? It comes to a point where you have to win.
Yeah.
Mediocrity, unacceptable anymore. This team making the playoffs this year would be nice. But I for me, all the people that said, oh, we wanted a higher pick. I never want a higher pick. I want to watch you win. I want to watch you go as far as you can.
Yes.
The Rangers had their high pick. They had Kako. Getting Lafreniere is a sweetener. It's awesome. Trust me, I'm one of the happiest people they got him now. But if you told me that they would have made a run like the Islanders made last year, I'd rather have that run. I'd rather watch them have success. But I'm sick and tired of watching them get to the postseason, and especially with that run from 2012 to 2016. Stop losing in the conference final or the second round. Get to the Stanley Cup, take care of business, have a parade. It's about that time.
When you think on the like micro level of hockey in every sport, you know, I look back and I think, wow, what a run the Islanders had. And I think about all the teams on opening night. All their team's goals is to win a cup. Only one's going to do that. I keep hitting my mic. Excuse me. Only one is going to do that. And at the end of the day, not that it's a waste if you don't win, but the hard work and dedication and effort you put in to let alone not make the playoffs, first off, I mean, that should fuel you just to get better and better. But, you know, one team gets to win it after a grueling, you can have an amazing, right? We saw with the Lightning, amazing, incredible, historic regular season 2 years ago out in the first round.
Yep.
All that you accomplished during that regular season means absolutely nothing. And you could be the Bruins looking at this division and going, we're going to take this. They very much could take this division. But we saw this year in the postseason, yes, no Tuukka Rask. Let's say Tuukka Rask was there and still happened. You lose early. It doesn't mean a thing. And that's why sports are so entertaining because, you know, all of it can be for nothing at the end of the day. One team's going to come away. And that's why I love sports, because it just shows it's so competitive. And, you know, there's a lot of other things in life that are competitive that people do. But for me, sports just encompasses, first of all, it shows, you know, that when a team loses in the Stanley Cup Finals, you see the team celebrating, and then you see the team crying. And they're as, you know, and in that moment, they're as good as like a Detroit team. You know, at the end of the day, they didn't win. You know, obviously one had a lot more success, went farther. At the end of the day, there is even as every other team that didn't make it to the finals. But I just think that to me, that you think about it at the smallest level, it's just very interesting to think about.
It is. So let's move on to some New York Rangers news. I talked about the John Davidson quote, and he told the New York Post basically this about training camp.
Yeah.
He said it is incumbent on every player in our organization to show up in the best shape possible and be ready to go and compete and make an impression on day one. That's it, period. There's no way around it. So essentially, he is saying that if these guys don't show up and make an impression right away, your shot's gone at making the team. And on a 10-day training camp with no preseason games, I mean, that's how it's going to be. So these young kids that are hoping to make spots, a kid like Kaapo Kakko, who is looking to solidify his role on that second line, if he doesn't have a good camp and Lafreniere does, don't be shocked if they're moving stuff around. I mean, you got to give yourself the best chance to win right away, especially if you're looking at a 56-game stretch. If one team can have a run like the Islanders had last year, they're guaranteeing themselves a playoff spot.
Oh, yeah, no question about it. If the Islanders do that again, they could have a mediocre season the rest of the way, but that's what, 17 games? That's one-third of the season?
That's 34 points over 17 games. You're thinking if a team wins, say, 38 games in a 56-game season, that's 76 points. So you're basically getting close to half right off the bat in a 17-game stretch.
And what, well, you know, what John Davidson said is probably what every owner, general manager, coach is thinking. Like, you know, there's very little room for error. And for teams that don't have playoff aspirations, there are teams that know for a fact, all right, we're not making the playoffs this year. Those are the teams that have the time to try guys out, try prospects out. Like, Detroit team's going to be better, but I don't think they're going to have a problem missing the playoffs as long as they get their prospects in there getting playing time. But you look at a team like the Rangers, the Islanders, trying out Wahlstrom, trying out Bellows. You play 5-6 games, you don't got it. You don't got it. You're going back down because there's no time for, you know, the Islanders don't make the playoffs this year, right? I know it's, again, top four, tough division. It's a step back. For the Rangers making it, you know, they're building off last year, again, a young defensive group. They need to get playing time. If the Rangers don't make it, I don't think it's necessarily a, wow, what happened? That's crazy. Like, this is
if it was an 82-game season, no,
that's,
I think it's a step back.
That's different. If the 82-game season, the Rangers and the Islanders both wild card spots at the minimum, I personally believe. But in a year like this, I don't think it's a problem. But for a team like the Islanders where you're on the map now and people are actually giving your players accolades, you know, they're getting talked about on NHL Network, which never happened before. Their team, they're getting the accolades they deserve now. To miss the playoffs and have a bad year this year, regardless of the situation, that's a step back. And it's about these young guys, you know, like we talked about with Christian. Pageau has the center spot on the third line. Who's going to play alongside him? You know, Wahlstrom, Bellows, Johnson, Dal Cole, Kavula. Who's going to do it? Well, it's going to be the guy that shows Trotz that he deserves it, but Trotz could be wrong. At the end of the day, let's say he picks Wahlstrom, and Wahlstrom just shows he doesn't have it. You know, he can't figure out how to play alongside Pageau, and he's struggling. Next guy up. It's got to be next man up. I know we talked about the Yankees a while back. Next man up attitude, but that's what it's going to be this year with prospects. There's no leeway for bad play, and if you play bad, you know, you might have to wait next year, and for some players, you might never get a chance again.
That's very true. So before we move on to our speed skate, let's look at a New York Rangers, New York Islanders, what to watch for over the course of the World Juniors and season. For the Rangers, Braden Schneider and Brett Berard both made their respective countries. Schneider, Canada, and Berard made the United States roster. So can they impress? I mean, Berard has a lot to prove. He's undersized, fifth-round pick. He had a great national development camp and played well over the last two seasons there. But, again, made it to the fifth round primarily because he's undersized and also because he went to Providence, hasn't looked good in his first two games there. Can he impress on the world stage? But primarily Rangers fans will be watching Braden Schneider, because the Rangers moved up to trade for him in the first round. He's a big physical defenseman. A lot of people aren't extraordinarily high on him. They think he's going to be solid, but not elite defenseman in the National Hockey League. Can he prove that he's got the ability to shut down the other country's best players in this tournament? I think he'll get a chance to, and I look forward to seeing that. And I'll talk about this more in a little bit, but who will have the better season, Kakko or Lafreniere? And will the Rangers' blue line hold up? I think that's all three things to watch for from the New York Rangers.
Yeah, I mean, the defense is the biggest thing that's separating them from being great. That's what it is. If the Rangers defense figured this out off the bat this year, we talk about Christian. There is no reason they should not be in a conversation for that fourth spot, maybe even a third. That really is their missing piece. You trust the goaltending. The offense is phenomenal. It's really about how can this young defense, you know, what steps can they take this year? And for the Islanders, you got two guys at the World Juniors. You have Simon Holmström, first round pick in 2019. Playing for Sweden, and Matias Rajaniemi, sixth round pick in 2020. He's playing for Finland. These are two guys to watch. Now, I don't – Holmstrom, he's been impressive since they've drafted. They love what they see from him. I don't think he has a chance this year, but this is valuable moments to get another eye on them, and I think it's important that these guys play well. He is a winger, and Rajaniemi is a defenseman. So definitely two guys to watch for at the World Junior Championships if you are an Islander fan. For me, the biggest thing is – two things. Is Oliver Wahlstrom is – is he in the starting lineup come opening night? Now, granted, he's fortunate because he can't play either left or the right. They don't want to do that to him. I'm pretty sure he's strictly a right winger. And or it might be a left winger. I'm not sure. But they don't want to move around. And there's two openings with Pageau, and you want to see him click right away. Because if you can find a chemistry with Pageau, this is a deep Islanders roster to begin with. You know, they had a lot of veterans, though, playing. They had a lot of bottom six veterans that were filling spots. Now you have the young guys ready to go. You would think that this is their time. I know Wahlstrom's young. Bellows is young. But this is Wahlstrom is playing overseas. He got hurt, but he was playing. He showed you that he cared. He wanted to play. He was very pissed off that he did not make the playoff roster. And you want to see that fire from him. You want to see him come out and explode. He's a fast guy, quick learner, quick thinker. And playing with a guy like Pageau and, let's say, a Ross Johnson as well. That is a chance of being a sneaky line that could help this Islanders offense get going, as well as, you know, play a shutdown defensive game. The next thing is Sorokin. And we're high on him, high hopes for this kid. And we know he's going to be great. It's not a thought. We know he's going to be great. You know, the question is, how long does it take? So, what does he do in his debut? I think for the Islanders netminders over the past X amount of years, they have been as good as their defense. When their defense figured out, when Trotz came in and built that defensive base system, they played their way. Thomas Greiss looked like an all-star. Robin Leonard had, again, these are goalies that are very good, but the defense surely helps him out. The question becomes, how good is this Islanders defense going to play in front of Sorokin? Trust. Off the bat, the trust, I think they're going to have trust in him, but we talked about it with Lundqvist and with Talbot. When Lundqvist went down and Talbot played, the defense tightened up, and they went on a great run, and it maybe showed that Talbot was an unreal goaltender when, at the end of the day, he was a mediocre goaltender that just got really good defense that let him relax in his crease. For Sorokin, he's got a great defense in front of him. Yeah, no Devon Taves. Question marks with how good Dobson can be. You still got Letty. No Boychuk, who did a tremendous job in blocking shots, keeping guys to the outside. You don't have him. Can Sorokin stand tall? Now, I think, you know, Christian said that he thinks there's going to be a little adjustment period, which is fine.
Were you off the stream when he predicted how many starts he got?
Yeah, I got booted.
He predicted 10 to 15.
Okay.
And that more aligns with what I was saying, because I really think, as much as the hype is there, he's not going to be able to just come in.
Yeah.
Granted, he's had the practice time, but somebody, you're not facing practice guys, right? You're facing guys that have the intent to score on you.
Yeah.
There's a difference in practice shots and game shots.
Oh, I completely agree.
And I think a big aspect that we have avoided thinking about is 8 games versus every team. If they play him too much, these teams are going to pick his tendencies apart.
Oh, yeah. Right?
So now a veteran goalie might be able to make adjustments. We might see the same thing with Shesterkin. When they were playing over in Russia, they didn't play the same team 8 times, right? So these young goalies are going to have to learn that, hey, if I'm weak on my glove, I better spend every waking minute of practice practicing on my glove hand, because the guys that are going to see me for the 4th or 5th time know where to shoot now.
So you bring up a great point, which – I thought about, but I never, we never spoke about it, is the fact that goalies this year, the amount of video that is going to be recorded of their gameplay breaking down, yep, is going to be different than every year before that. This could be a year where we see a lot of goalies struggle. A lot of goalies struggle because players, yes, the goalies are obviously looking and seeing where players shoot, but for a goalie, you know what your weakness and strengths are. No one's got to tell you that. But when the other team knows what it is, and they pickpocket, and now you have to adjust and try to figure out how to change your style based on what team you're playing, that could cause a lot of things. The goalie that comes to mind for me right away is Hopi. You know, he's coming off a really bad season where a lot of his tendencies were bad. They were picking him apart. Glove side was weak. You know, a lot of spots were weak. And you're looking for a bounce back year where every team is going to see you under a microscope, where to shoot, exactly where to shoot on you and beat you. It's going to be a long – some netminders are very good, that they're like Vasilevsky. Weakness here or there. But one thing that – early on, though, is I think Sorokin could play well early on. We might see him struggle down the stretch. Is nobody knows him off the bat. You've watched him in Russia, different league. He comes out and shines in the first couple of weeks or so, and maybe that's 10 or, let's say, 10 or 12 starts. He's dominant. You can see a lot of teams figure it out, and for a young goalie, you might get him a little bit. And it's mental game as well for goalies too. It's going to get frustrating for a lot of these guys that are trying to prove themselves. And again, though, will it make him stronger next year? Probably, because he'll have to focus on a lot of the little things that maybe in a full season teams don't pick apart. But in a season like this, where it's, all right, your glove is an inch too high or an inch too low. Now you got that. Now you know for next year. Okay. I think it might make them stronger, but I completely agree with you that 10 to 15 games, it is possible given the facts, you know, that's in front of us playing opponents 8 times.
Yeah, definitely. So let's move on to our speed skate, and we'll start with the New York Islanders wish list. So give me the 4 things that you have. They're all pretty straightforward, but lay them all out there for us.
So the top thing, Barzal's got to get signed. And we know he's going to get signed. Right now, the money is not a complete issue to me, given the fact that you just got to get him back. You got to get him, you know, he knows he's coming back just to ease everybody the tension. You got to sign him back now. And once you sign him, the other signings will happen. You know, next on my list, Matt Martin. You cannot have the fourth line, the best fourth line in hockey, which was injury riddled all year last year. That be it. That be their final hurrah. Yes, they played well in the playoffs. Matt Martin played well in the playoffs. But you look at it and it's, all right, there's no way you are ending it on that note. That poor Clutterbuck, skate cut out for a while. Zeke is out for a while. That fourth line was not the same. And I think that was a reason why the Islanders struggled to play consistent hockey. They didn't have their fuel line, their go-to MC squared line. Matt Martin has to be back. He loves being a New York Islander. He was on Toronto for a little bit and realized, I got to go home. I was listening actually to The Fan, WFAN, and Boomer Esiason is his father-in-law, and he was talking about it. And he said, it was an article, I think, actually, with Molly Walker, New York Post. She did a story on Esiason where Martin talked to him and said, Esiason said, listen, as much as I want you to be a Ranger, this was prior to him coming back, you need to go back to the Islanders. That's where you belong. That's where all your friends are. That's where you played your best hockey. That's where you have to go back to. And it's great. When he came back and he found that out, it was, you know, I'm not going to lie, a tear came to my eye, because this was a guy that just showed what it meant to be an Islander. And, you know, we have Ross Johnson, who might be a younger Matt Martin and can do what he does. You can't have last year and the way it did for Matt Martin. You need Matt Martin to be back. Is there something you want to say?
You said it's the best fourth line in hockey, and all I have to say is they better be, because they pay them all a ridiculous amount.
I mean, no. I mean, they show you that they go against any line in hockey, but I mean, I'm biased, but I really do think they are the best fourth line in hockey. Next is signing Olli Grunwald. This might not be a sign that needs to happen. I surely think it does, because first off, he's going to take a minimum deal, 1 year, $1 million. Older guy, Lamoriello's dealt with him when he was with the Devils as the GM. With Dobson, you know, you're hoping he takes that next step. You have Boychuk gone. You need a seventh guy that you can rely on. And Green might start. We saw Green start in the playoffs when Boychuk got hurt and didn't let Boychuk come back in. Now, granted, we learned after the fact that Boychuk was never coming back in. Boychuk had a career-ending injury that he was trying to fight through, but at the end of the day, he couldn't. But Andy Green is still a guy playing first-line minutes at his age because he's just so smart. He doesn't do flashy stuff. He's not stupid with the puck. He doesn't stand out. He's a guy that goes out there and does his job, eats minutes, plays a defensive style, which on many teams right now, a lot of the young guys are offensively driven. For a guy like Dobson to calm his nerves, having a guy like Andy Green, not even if he's playing, even if he's just in the locker room helping out, I think it needs to happen. Last thing is they got to sign Corey Schneider because they only got 3 goalies rostered. They legally need a fourth. Corey Schneider is a guy that's played for Lou Lamoriello. Lou Lamoriello was really high on him, got him from Vancouver. And I think it's a chance for Schneider to teach a guy like a Sorokin. I know they have Varlamov, Sorokin, Skarik, who's in the minors. Teach these guys what it means to be professional. And yes, he's done that last year we saw him play with the Bing Devils. And if anything, he's a mentor. And I think if there's a place that he could get his career back on track to maybe get to the NHL at some point, Lamoriello wants to help him do that. And I think it's a perfect scenario for him. Again, they need a goalie. He's going to be cheap. He knows Lou Lamoriello well, and I think he'll fit into what this Islander culture is all about.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think that deal is pretty much done, the Corey Schneider one.
Yeah.
Because it makes no sense for both parties why it wouldn't get done. Schneider just wants a place to play. He's make some money, and obviously he wants to stay local. He's got a family, and he was in Jersey playing in Bing last year, so now he can go to the Islanders, probably play in the AHL once that picks up. I don't know what he's going to do in the meantime. Maybe he'll just be that third taxi goalie that follows the team around. So like you said, it is another veteran presence, at least for the first month of the season, helping out Sorokin. Barzal has to get done. We know that. And the other two, I think, will follow.
If this does not get done and there's some crazy stuff, like, I don't know. You see
he gets traded to the Rangers?
No. Out of nowhere, like an option comes in, the Islanders don't match or whatever. It's not going to happen.
You're not going to see one at this point just because of the cap.
The question at this point is how much and how many years. So that's really it. But it's you know what has to happen?
Well, it's going to be 1 year probably because he wants to go play for Seattle.
Stop it. He played for the Seattle Thunderbirds when he played his juniors. But
he did.
Stop it. We'll deal with that when the time comes. It's not going to happen. He's not signing a one-year deal. Let's be realistic here, Brendan.
Oh, I would laugh so hard. But for the Rangers, my wish list is obviously their roster is pretty much intact. So no signings need to happen. Acquisitions are just a happy thought at this point. They're not going to have anything. What they signed and what they have in their roster is what they're going to have to start the season. So for me, the first thing on my wish list is a playoff win. We talked about it. I want to see them get in. It would be awesome if they get in, but I don't want them to get in just to get swept like they did last year. Have some competition, which I think without the hiatus and going into the season, especially if they're hot, getting a win, not a series win, just a win would be great, and they should get that. The Kako we expected last year has to show up this year. Obviously, he had a lot of playing time overseas for Finland and then in the World Juniors, also playing for Finland, not in the Finnish Liga. But he has to produce, because if he's going to be on that line with Stroman Panarin, he's got to play or else he's going to get demoted. And it's going to, you're going to start hearing that talk of, okay, he's a bust, because the Rangers have had a lot of those in the top 10 and he needs to start. I'm not talking about 70 points. All right. I'm not talking about 50 points in a 56 game season. I'm talking about 35 to 40 points, be solid, get confidence, shoot the puck more. And if he plays like he did in those three games against Carolina, he's going to have that. He's going to reach 40 points. He looked very good in those three games. My third is we need to see the $8 million version of Jacob Trouba. Too many inconsistencies last year. We talked about the opening night, that great shot. We all thought it was going to be a phenomenal year, and then all of a sudden his defense went downhill. He struggled to score at points, wasn't on the power play like he was in Winnipeg. We need to see him solidify that blue line, because if he's out there with a Tony DeAngelo and then the first line is Fox and Lindgren, those four defensemen, one, they can't get hurt, and two, they have to shut down everybody they go against, because Jack Johnson and Brendan Smith is, you're going to have, you're pulling your hair out watching them play. So Trouba has to be good. He has to be playing up to that $8 million contract for the Rangers to make the postseason. And finally, I want to see the World Junior Championship version of Alexei Lafreniere, the one that got hurt but still managed to win MVP. That's how good he was. And I don't want him to get hurt, obviously, but I want him to play up to that caliber. Different competition, but we've seen the skill set he has. He's going to be playing with another youngster in Edel, probably another young guy in Gaudier, who's a huge body, get to the front of the net. And Gaudier hasn't scored a goal, by the way, in the NHL. So park your big behind in front of the net and let Lafreniere find you. That's my wish list, and that's what I think we have to see from especially Lafreniere and Kako, but especially of a Trouba as well.
I think the biggest thing is Kako, because he can't be an outlier on that line. He can't be a weak link, because, again, if the defense does struggle, the offense is going to have to overproduce. And they've got the pieces to do so. They got the pieces for the offense to carry them. And when you get to the playoffs, it's one thing. Defense has to wake up. But, again, in a shortened season, you can't afford someone to be out there that doesn't belong. If he doesn't look like he belongs early on, you're going to demote him. And then if Lafreniere goes on a tear, you move him up. And it's just that's the nature of the beast.
I think they'll be interchangeable. Regardless, if Kako's struggling for five games and then starts to pick it up, they'll keep swapping, because Quinn does that all the time.
Yeah. So we got a couple of minutes left. Let's go into which players on a new team are destined to disappoint. We got a couple here in Markstrom, Holpe, or Murray. And Brendan, I'll dish it to you first.
So this is not going to be popular. I think Markstrom is destined to disappoint just because of the bar of how high it's set for him. Obviously, Murray is expected to be good, but not great. And Holpe is, you don't expect much from him either. So for me, I'm going to say that Markstrom's the one destined to disappoint. All Canadian division, we talked about the eight or nine meetings per team, because there are only seven teams there. It's going to be tough for him to play at that consistent level. He hasn't avoided injury in his career. So for me, he's the one that's destined to disappoint.
Well, I think you know my answer here, Brendan.
I do. I don't even have to think.
It's Brendan Holpe. This is a major gamble on Vancouver, and I think I just don't believe in this guy anymore. I don't think he believes in himself, quite frankly, the way he plays and the laziness that I see. I just think, you know, Vancouver is one of those teams that's trying to take that next step, and I really think they made a poor decision getting Holpe. Now, granted, a veteran guy could help Demko out a lot, maybe, but it seems that he signed though long. You know, it's not a short 1 year deal.
It's his 3 year deal.
Stuck with him. And I think that, unfortunately, I just think he's the wear and I just don't think he'll be able to get back to that point where he was dominating this league. And yeah, he might be an all-star because of fan votes, but I don't see it. The last thing we'll get to, Brendan, we're at 7:30, but who cares? We're not on a clock. So which free agent do you believe will sign before the season starts? You know, I know what you're going to say, but you know, let's hear it.
So to me, it's Mike Hoffman. I think that he was waiting for a date. I don't see anybody else that's really in a position to have a team that wants them like somebody will want a Mike Hoffman. And I think that after losing Dadonov, Florida has to retain him. So that's just a matter of time before you hear that announcement. And I would expect it before the new year.
I completely agree with that, because if they don't, and in that now more than ever looking at the division, you have to get him back to give yourself a fighting chance. Yes, they got great pieces. Barkov, Huberdeau, Ekblad. Bobrovsky, if he bounces back, which is the biggest question. But for me, it's Daniel Char going back to Boston. Now, I've read a couple articles that said that him and his agent have stated until there is complete transparency about what this season is, he's not signing a deal. He said there's a chance he retires. And while you hate to see that and be a COVID-riddled season and the Bruins not having Rask and not getting another chance, I mean, he's won. So, and he's captain. He's been a great player for the years that he's been with Boston. But I think we'll see him back on the Bruins, just, you know, especially in the division they're in, where it's not going to be an easy run, but they should win the division. I think that's, you know, he doesn't have to play top minutes, be a bottom six guy, but it's still Zdeno Chara. I don't think the league's ready to say goodbye to him.
I don't think the league ever will be, but eventually we will say goodbye. I think that if he is content with the COVID protocols and what the season's going to look like, this would be the perfect season for him to say goodbye. I know there might not be fans in attendance, but 56 games, not a huge wear and tear in his body. He gets to play. We all think the Bruins are going to make the postseason, go on a run. So he might have that one final chance. And who knows, if the vaccine winds up getting administered in June like it's supposed to, we might have a chance at, you know, fans in that playoff, the back end of it. So he could wind up lifting a cup in front of some fans in Boston. I think this is a good way out.
I completely agree. And Brendan, you know, it's been a rough week, but talking hockey actually is the best medicine for it. So I appreciate always you coming on and talking hockey with us for, you know, another great episode. Brendan, next week is episode number 30.
Yeah, that is mind-boggling that we're at 30 already.
Time flies when you're having fun. Thanks to everyone that supports us. Please follow us on our social media accounts. It's been great. We've got a YouTube up. So we'll see you guys next week. Till then, stay safe.